Gulf Canada.
And I am visiting,
like, so he runs these boondocks. He could tell you how much the square inch of boondocks makes in revenue and how much this is. And if something isn't penciling out, he'll replace it with something else. And where the rec center goes, oh, we can't eliminate the jittery. There's 18 people in town.
That's right, that one, that neighbor's.
Yeah.
So,
it's for $9.
Yeah.
It's because that's what I was
saying. Yeah. Totally.
And we want to really help
you. Yeah. But anyway, there's.
So we.
I don't know. It would be, you know, I voted to put it on the ballot.
They did not pay her at all.
For the whole day?
For the whole day.
It's not on the ballot.
No.
So there has been.
But I honestly didn't know that. I thought, this is the issue.
But it's just really funny.
People stepped up last night and said, okay, we'll do it.
Someone said that. This just
and will they do it again? Will they say,
well, it's important, but it's not that.
You know, let's expand it.
Because
the county is grown.
Mm-hmm. This camera is not really valuable.
The facility is the same size, and we have 30% more people.
Is it bursting
at the seams?
Yeah.
I mean, it's used, every space is
good. Every day.
Okay.
And, we turned away 300 basketball players.
Right. It's an
issue.
It's one of the huge, sorry, the
line. You know, like, that's
stuff.
And my shower.
And
it's
well,
to the bathroom.
And that, there's some value to our home, which is the rec center. You know, somebody comes in from out of state and goes, what does the community offer?
In all new communities in the states, in other states, they're putting in the access. They're putting into these things when they start this whole new subdivision. Because it's an add-on. I know.
Why did my father?
And that's in the road.
Yeah, I remember when Rachel and Robert.
For 2 hours.
I didn't even realize it had gone into
and I'm like, that's not a drunk car. No.
For 2 hours.
My kids are there for. But that's because we have her do
all
my vegetables and the vegetables.
Yeah.
And the vegetables.
So you can justify it.
Yeah. Conrad.
As I'm driving to work,
I see you everywhere when I drive. I'm doing that.
I know your schedule.
She tries to hit you, but you're too fast.
If there's nothing I hear,
it's good to see you.
No, I'm the one at home now.
For the kids.
So that's the part I'll do. Because
my sister, how are you?
I am finer than Fox here.
Good. That hair is very fine.
It's very fine.
I haven't seen you for a while. What's that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm still walking.
I know, you're everywhere. How's your family?
Very good. I don't understand. They get old sometimes.
So, are you here for a reason or just to hang out with us?
I just wanted to talk to Karen about what's going on in my street.
But now I think she's doing a great job.
See, I've been here forever.
Yeah.
You had a presentation of what's coming in.
were set for Monday night, 5:30 to 8:45. Those are the applications of the five. But I'll email you instructions on what we're doing. We have businesses in the industrial park that never think of asphalt plants that create sand. Some of our highest payers are people you've never even heard of. It's amazing. We really are solid because of that industrial park.
Because it's a diverse group of people getting
assistance. Yeah, I mean, we're a suburb in a lot of ways, but we're also a fully, we have our land use. Matrix that's really diverse. It's good. It's really up to city.
Thank you.
These are the five.
I just want to shake
Conrad, I wasn't
a voice of reason.
And you are too. Enjoy.
So they were all out of the little plates, so I had to get two desserts to fill up my big plate.
Here's the five applications for
okay.
The public works director.
Okay.
We are doing it Monday night.
Okay.
5:30. And I'll send you instructions on it.
Okay. Fundraising for re-election.
Great, okay, fantastic.
Thank you. Oh, you know, that's the cue. I like the fact that you're wearing a city shirt underneath that. I got to start doing that.
I've got so many city shirts, I just thought I'm going to start wearing them.
I do too.
I should have put one on.
Well, I've got a. I try to use.
Didn't do it over Zoom. It was like an all hands on deck meeting.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was really fast. I don't think my clothes match. But I should have changed before I came here. Mm.
Well, I've got a lot of shirts.
I totally rep the city every golf tournament I've made.
Well,
I have a friend who is on Murray's city council, and sometimes he wears his jazz jersey. So maybe we're a little too formal.
I just think that I try to wear my city shirts wherever I can and have any excuse possible because I've got so many of them too.
I just wear mine to work.
Well, Linda helped us pick those really great ones last time. So.
Where did the police run? Yeah. Oops, I turned around. All right, we'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session of the City Council meeting for September 20th of 2022. It is 7:15. So much for my efforts to start us on time. I apologize. I'm Mayor Brian Horrocks. All council members are present, and we'll turn it over to Council Member Baskin for our thought and pledge.
Thank you, Mayor. Three thoughts today, and they all go to the idea of what leadership is about. We all try to be better in our role as leaders, and there's this concept of ethos, pathos, and logos. And some quotes that come with that, I think, is something I wanted to share. First is a quote from Abraham Lincoln, who says, "Nearly all men or women can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." Second one is Maya Angelou. "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." And I'm sure we've all heard that. And then finally, I don't know who Warren Bennis is, but I liked this. "Followers who tell the truth and leaders who listen to it are an unbeatable combination." And I like that very much. So those are my thoughts for today. Please repeat with me the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that, Council Member Baskin. That I'm reminded of a quote, I think was King George III, when he heard that George Washington had served two terms and stepped down as President of the United States, and he said if he truly voluntarily gave up power, he's the greatest man that ever lived. And that's, and he was certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Next item is citizen comment, and this is a moment where we let anyone in the audience that would like to address the council to come forward. If anyone would like to do that, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing none, we'll move on. Our first item is consideration of a preliminary plan and final plat approval for the Phoenicia Place subdivision, a two-lot commercial subdivision on Cutler Drive.
Thank you. So this is located at 480 North Cutler Drive. The parcel fronts on both Cutler Drive and Redwood Road. You'll remember that you saw the concept plan for this back in July, on July 19th, and gave a positive approval on it. So before you tonight is the preliminary plan and final plat. Because it's a minor subdivision, they were able to do both of those two things together because they're fairly simple. All of the required red lines have been taken care of. The DRC had asked the property owners to dedicate additional right-of-way on Cutler Drive in the event that it needs to be widened with the new addition of the school that's going to go to the north of this property, and also to dedicate a right-of-way, a public right-of-way for on Redwood Road for the trail system to go through, which that would be installed on this parcel when the commercial development goes on it. So just as an aside, it has no bearing on the actual approval, but lot number one is going to be purchased by Spectrum Academy. They'll be putting new ball field, soccer field on there for their schools, and then they'll be moving their STARS program, which is their high school for extra special needed kids. Will be built on the existing ball fields that are there. But at this time, it's went through Planning Commission. It has no red line corrections, and it's been given a favorable recommendation for approval to the City Council.
Thank you. Any questions on this? Or is there a motion?
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the preliminary plan and final plat for Phoenicia Place subdivision at 480 North Cutler Drive with no conditions.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comment? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you. That passes.
Thank you.
I guess I should just mention I received a invitation today from Spectrum Academy to attend their groundbreaking on October 12th at 4 o'clock. I'm sure if any of you would like to attend that, they would love to have you. Next item is consideration of Resolution 2022-34R, a resolution amending the City of North Salt Lake General Plan, updating the moderate income housing element, and approval of the annual housing report. And Allie, if anyone was able to read through this whole thing, they deserve bonus points.
Well, you only had to read starting on page 21. So hopefully it wasn't too painful. Am I pushing the right button? There we go. As I'm sure you already know, state code requires that municipalities prepare a general plan to address the present and future needs of the city and to guide future growth and development. Part of the general plan is it's required to have a moderate income housing element to address housing needs. The state code requires that the moderate income housing element provide a realistic opportunity to meet the need for additional moderate income housing within the next 5 years, selects three or more moderate income housing strategies, and they have like 24 specific strategies listed in state code, and then includes an implementation plan. We're required to adopt that plan. We're also required to report on that plan every year to the State Department of Workforce Services by October 1st. So this effort is an update of the implementation section only of the moderate income housing plan, and then approving the annual report. We plan to update the entire plan with all the data and everything next year, hopefully as an effort to update the entire general plan all at once. So tonight before you is really just a revision of the implementation section, which starts on 21. And I just want to go over the two changes that the Planning Commission had. One was that we include a revision date, making it clear that we didn't update the data, we only updated the implementation section. And then they also added, at my request, they added one more implementation strategy, which is 3.1.2, which is on page 23. And that is to create a city-sponsored home repair grant program to provide grants for low to moderate income homeowners to make needed repairs on their homes. And the reason I wanted to have that included, the reason we wanted to have that included, is because Davis County has pulled funding for their CDBG program, and that is what the Housing Authority has used for their emergency repair program and their roofing repair program. So right now, there is no funding for anybody who is lower income and needs repairs on their homes for the next year. And so I wanted to get this in there and pitch that idea to the City Council that maybe we, as a stopgap measure, relaunch the home repair grant program, but just do it as a city-sponsored effort, or look for other grant funds to do that program again. So that's really it.
Along that line, don't we have a fund from our CDAs that...
So we do have housing funds that we could use for that purpose, yes.
Okay.
So in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through every implementation strategy. Most of it was just to match the wording in state code, because that's a requirement that the implementation strategy match exactly. So we already had most of these already in there. They were just worded a little bit differently. And then we added specific implementation, like that we would do an inventory of the zoning or things like that. And then we needed to put timing, benchmarks, things like that. So that's really the only changes that were in there.
Any Any further questions? Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion, Mayor. I move the City Council adopt Resolution 2022-34R, a resolution amending the moderate income housing element of the general plan and approving the 2022 housing report with the following findings. So the state legislature has determined that cities must facilitate a reasonable opportunity for a variety of housing, including moderate income housing, and that the proposed draft meets the requirement of the state code to address moderate income housing.
Second.
We'll give it to Lisa. Oh.
I didn't hear it.
She didn't have her mic on, so. Yeah. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. That passes. Allie, while you're there, let's consider Resolution 2022-35R, a resolution endorsing and supporting the application of the FEMA for Building Resilient Infrastructure and Community Grant, BRIC.
It's a mouthful. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's covered up. Okay. So this is an issue that I've been working collaboratively with the city engineer on. We became aware of the FEMA BRIC program, which we've applied for funds for in the past. It used to be called the Pre-Disaster Mitigation Grant Program, and that's how we funded the Spring Hill landslide. And we're likely to be getting the funding for the generator grant that we applied for last year. I don't know if you remember that. So it's the same grant program. When I approached the city engineer to ask if she had any suggestions for projects for this program, she enthusiastically told me about the Honeywell. So over the past decade, there's been subsidence, which is that the ground is sinking in some areas of the west side of the city due to falling aquifer levels. They're caused and exacerbated by drought. And it's the Honeywell pump station has been dramatically impacted by that subsidence. There's been settling of more than 6 inches, and so the piping is staying in place while the building around it is sinking because the well is drilled 500 feet into the ground. And so you can see, I don't know how to use the laser pointer on this. Oh, you won't be able to see it. So in the bigger picture, on the right side, the very right of the bigger picture, there's blue pipe on a curve, blue pipe below it, and in between it, there's kind of a rust-colored pipe. And that is the amount that has sunk. And so we're having to go in and patch and do everything we can to keep this well and pump station working and functioning. It serves about 20% of the residents in the city, so it's really critical infrastructure. The grant program will, if we get the grant, it would be to reconstruct the entire building. We have right now, like, the floor cracks pretty frequently. The floor just falls apart. The pipes will burst, and we're really just putting a Band-Aid on it every year. So the grant would be to reconstruct the entire building, put 70-foot deep driven piles that the building will be reconstructed on, so that as the ground sinks around it, the building will stay. And so the grant application requires a 25% match, but a 30% match if you want to do that competitively. So we opted for the competitive as our recommendation. So the total project cost to reconstruct that on those 70-foot driven piles would be $1,345,000. The grant request would be for $941,500, and the city's match is $403,500. And those funds would be available. We would find out about the award about this time next year. The funds would be available over the winter next year. So this resolution is just your approval of us submitting the application, setting aside the grant funds, and designating the city manager or his designee as being able to sign on the grant application.
I read through this and I didn't see where the address is for the Honeywell pump.
I don't think that we give out that information. It's protected information where our wells are and pump station water facilities are, so we didn't want to put any maps or anything like that in a public meeting.
I see. Thank you.
I had a question.
Just to answer that, though, we have a well field in Woods Cross, north of 11th North, which is where our wells are. I don't know if this well is in that location or not. Can we give a general location of where it is?
So we do have kind of a well field that spreads from about 900 North in North Salt Lake into Woods Cross to about 1950 South by Woods Cross address. And we have three wells in the vicinity, as well as other entities who have wells in the same kind of general well field. And the subsidence central point is located in Woods Cross, so we're kind of on the periphery of it for our Honeywell. I'm more than happy to take anyone to visit who'd like. We just don't want to publish the address. It's part of the security measures to protect our drinking water sources.
Thanks for that. I thought it was fair to give you the general
location. Karen, while you're there, a quick question. If we, with the 70-foot piles, does that work both directions? I mean, if we got into a real wet cycle where the aquifers were filling up,
yeah,
this would preserve the building.
Yeah, so
well,
what's happening is there are layers of soil that consolidate when they dry out. When they re-wet, they do not re-enlarge, if that makes sense. So it's not like expensive clays that shrink when they're dry and they expand when they're wet. So what they've done in the Woods Cross area is they've done geotechnical borings and have found a stabilization layer at about 30 feet. But then below that, there are additional layers of soil that will also consolidate if that water table continues to drop. So the second supportive layer is at 70 feet. And we do not anticipate ever reaching that level with these kind of drawdown problems. We'll have much bigger issues. So that's where the 70-foot comes in. Part of the study is the investigational borings to determine that. But if the level drops, basically we're suspending a slab such as a garage that's over a downstairs rec room. So if the ground subsides, the building's stabilized. If for any unanticipated reason the ground rises, and I'm told it cannot, it won't damage the building.
Any further questions?
The only question I have is, what about the other buildings in the area? Are they having a similar problem, or is it just our well?
Right. So at the very center of the subsidence in Woods Cross, they are having damage to buildings from differential settlement. The reason that we don't see significant problems is the entire ground is settling somewhat uniformly in this area. But the well is anchored. So if you go into the building, it appears that our well is pushing out of the ground.
Understand. That makes sense.
Yeah, Woods Cross actually has several homes that I think that are at risk.
Yeah, the center of the subsidence is there, and they've actually done some retrofit push piers on a number of those homes with some grants.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else for Sally?
No, unless you have more questions.
I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2022-35R authorizing the submittal of a FEMA BRIC grant application seeking funds for the reconstruction of the Honeywell Pump House and authorizing matching funds.
I'll second the motion.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 That passes. Thank you. Next item is consideration of increased funding for the Redwood Road West Side Path Connection Project. Karen?
So the Redwood Road West Side Path Connection is a project that was funded through the STIP program, which is the state's the statewide transportation improvement program. In the spring, and I apologize, there was an error in your memo. There was a change order that was approved, but because it was under $25,000, it was approved by Ken and not City Council, as I said. So the program has some requirements, and there's a match. So to date, they have completed the property acquisition, the environmental study, all of the engineering design. They go out to bid, and as you can see in this drawing, the red sections are the areas of path that this project entails. It's three parcels. The blue section are paths that are already in place, which is why we called it a connection project. Those buildings are already constructed, the development's completed, and so if we need to get the path in to connect the areas. So it went out to bid, and we're $80,000 over the engineer's estimate, which was done a couple of years ago when we applied for the grant. So the proposed cost allocation for this would be UDOT has agreed to provide $25,000 in the middle column that says grant share, and the city has agreed, or we're requesting that we agree to pay an extra $55,000 for the cost. That provides in the left the total project amount. It was originally estimated to be about $300,000. The total to date cost with the bid price is about $472,000. So the city would be paying a total of 33% of the project. The reason that this is being recommended to you is that if we do not do the project, we are required to pay back all funds that have been expended, which would include the property and the engineering, which actually would cost us more than the $156,000, which is our share, to put it in. So the recommendation is to approve the increased cost. Will come in the future for a budget adjustment request.
I'm the first to admit, I was raised by Depression-era parents, and I do stupid things to save it. I'll spend a dollar to save a penny, but my one thought was, could we make a 6 foot wide path for this one little area and save some money? Or is that like the planners out there just cringing now, like, I can't believe you just said that?
So we do have the option of reducing the scope of it. The discussion I had with the folks with the Rossarch Front and with UDOT about the options that we had. So option one is we don't do the project. It costs the city more. I don't recommend that. The second option would be reduce the scope of the work. I also don't recommend that. And the reason for that is part of the reason the costs are high is we're dealing with small quantities. So if we were to reduce the scope of the project, let's say 30%, instead of doing three parcels and making the connections on either end where it's blue, let's say we were to remove from Robinson Drive South and only do the northern portion, or we did two-thirds of the total length, the total project cost, we would have to rebid, and it is highly unlikely to come in at two-thirds of the cost of the bid. So the total bid amount was about $192,000. If we reduce it by 30%, we might get as much as a 20% savings.
So I wasn't recommending doing away with part of it. I was just saying, let's, you know, instead of having a, we don't have a 4 foot sidewalk here, we have an 8 foot trail.
Right.
What if we had a 6 foot trail? Would we, you know what I'm.
So I didn't ask if that was an option, but I certainly could do so.
Well, yeah. Straighten me out.
Straighten you out. Well, what I found that those the equipment required to a 6-foot trail is kind of specialized. And so when they're even talking about building trails, when I used to attend all the trails meetings, that the 8-foot wide is pretty common. But you start going even, you know, anything other than 8 feet wide, if you get down to the 6 feet wide, then they have special equipment to lay the asphalt down, and there's only certain companies that would have that, and they charge a lot more. So, okay. I mean, you know, if you go down to 4 feet, then you got a sidewalk, and a lot of people do that, but the 6 feet is kind of oddball, and they were saying, yeah, be really careful when you do your trails, because the 6-foot trails might cost you a lot more than the 8-foot trail.
Well, we actually, David just reminded me that when we looked at the cost for Tunnel Springs, a 6-foot trail was a higher cost per linear foot than an 8-foot wide trail for exactly that reason.
That's what I was told before, that that's just one of those things you got to be careful of.
Good to know.
I have more governmental reasons, but I'll, it looks like things are resolving. Yeah. So.
I'll add a reason that is not logistical. I think we have a really unique opportunity in Foxborough to make a truly walkable neighborhood where people could just survive there without cars. And that is encouraged by ease of access, and wider walkways do that, because like two bikes could pass each other easily in 8 feet, and in 6 feet they might swing out wide across a stroller. So I, in general, think wider paths, when we want to be walkable, make a difference.
I promise I'll behave for the rest of the meeting.
Mayor? The one thing I wanted to say is I've seen this provision from UDOT in contracts that if the project isn't completed, then we have to return the money. I have to applaud whoever's writing the contracts for UDOT, because, boy, that feels like extortion, but we get the work done.
Yeah.
I am.
I'll make a motion that the City Council authorize city staff to proceed with the Redwood Road West Side Path Connection Project, including an increase in the project cost of $55,000. I further instruct city staff, the council further instructs city staff to prepare a future budget adjustment to include the cost increase.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comments? Let's do roll call, Lalisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Consideration of Ordinance 2022-06, an ordinance amending the city's code Title VII, Public Ways and Properties Related to Excavation Within the City.
So the purpose for this ordinance is that we have existing ordinances in place that control what can be done as far as a straight excavation. Their current restriction reads no cut for 5 years on a new street and no cut for 3 years on a resurfaced street. There are no current exceptions provided in the code, and there are no guidelines defined for exceptions that should happen. However, exceptions have occurred. Specifically, we have approved building lots in our commercial and industrial area, for example. There are frequently not utilities stubbed prior to the building being built because no one has any idea what will build there. So a residential home, we know, needs a 3/4 or 1-inch water connection and a 4-inch sewer line. But if you have a building that's an office warehouse space, or if you have a building that's a commercial production area, such as, you know, doing painting or other things, they may have a very high water demand and require other utilities. We had someone go in on a brand new road, and in order to complete their build, we had to allow them to cut the road. And the patch was done under the requirements that we have in our city standards, which are designed for older roads. So this ordinance has a couple of things to it. One is it provides a definition for new streets and a definition for resurfaced streets. The intent of new streets is not a new subdivision with new curb and gutter, but a new road with new asphalt. So we're defining that as any road that's receiving 3 inches or more of new asphalt. And a resurfaced street would be an overlay of less than 3 inches, a bonded matrix overlay, or a chip seal. We're not counting minor surface work, such as slurry seals. We also define the exceptions. The exceptions are for approved building lots, or exceptions that must be granted by City Council. The City Engineer providing a favorable recommendation for City Council to consider. And then all exceptions that are granted will have to be restored in accordance with the adopted standards and specifications that come next.
I think as I read this, this may have been my doing.
Yeah.
We'd repaved it from Center Street to the traffic circle, and then within a year, Weber Water, somebody plowed right down the middle of it. And the patch was so bad, it was sinking in the middle, and I just thought, we need to do something. And so Paul came up with a new policy. I think this makes a lot of sense, but I'd like to, I guess I want to make sure that our patching guideline is adequate, that we...
Do you want me to review what comes next before we come to this?
Yeah.
So
That's another motion is what you're saying.
It is. Okay. I have a resolution following this with the detail that I have proposed for that
if
patching.
If we have a graphic of that, maybe it would be good to go through it.
So the design requirement that we're proposing, and again, this is only for new roads or resurfaced streets less than 3 years old. So the intent of this is to protect the infrastructure. It will cost more to repair the road, but the person doing the cutting is then bearing that cost. So there are a couple restrictions on this list, one of which is we'll do a standard T-patch. So we'll go 2 feet on either side of the trench. We will pave to the full surface of the road. They're then required to mill 4 feet on all sides of the patch. So if you have a 4-foot waterline trench, you end up with a 6-foot patch. You then mill 14 feet and overlay the road. And what this does is this prevents those seams that go all the way through that cause those point of failures. In addition, they're not allowed to put the seam in a wheel path or within 33 inches of the edge of the road, for example, a curb and gutter or the edge of an asphalt if we don't have curb. And this will prevent a trench that's running longitudinally down the road from leaving a 2-foot strip of asphalt on one side and having the patch in both wheel wells. So what will happen is they may end up having to do that mill and overlay from the nearest lane or center line of the road all the way to the lip of the gutter. Again, it prevents those failure points from those patches from occurring. And then finally, they're required to restore any surface seal treatment, such as the HA5 product that we use or a slurry, 1 foot outside of this new asphalt surface, so that the road, every new road we build, we usually do a protective surface on a year later. This will prevent a clean, smooth asphalt patch against an area of the road that has that protective layer that has to be restored. The intent is to prevent the deterioration of the road when an excavation is warranted in a new road, not to allow anyone to cut the new road just because they want to.
And then do we have a charge by square foot or something by how big the cut is and everything?
We do. So part of our excavation permit process involves the amount of square footage that they're cutting in the road. Currently, if someone comes in and requests to cut a road that's in our moratorium period, they're just told no. It's a no cut. But on older roads, those fines are also levied or those fees are charged. Okay. And that's in our
fee schedule. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It has a bigger name, but...
This slide is actually from the next item, but these two items, of course, go together. As you can see, they're related. The first code amendment is important because right now we don't have definitions. We don't have adequate definitions to support a policy that's described like this. And so it's important that we amend the city code. And then these standards that you just looked at for how those cuts happen will be put into the standards and specifications that the city engineer and the public works department will use as we go forward. So it really takes two motions, item 8 and then item 9 on the agenda.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Any further questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I can make a motion, Mayor. I move that City Council approve Resolution 2022-36R, amending the adopted standards and specification manual for public.
Do we have to do them in order?
Because you're right. This is the second one, yeah. Isn't it? Probably doesn't matter. Amending the adoption standard specification manual for public infrastructure for asphalt patching. Yeah, but I don't know if it matters if we do them in order. I don't know unless somebody tells me otherwise.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. This is on item 9. Todd, I assume we don't have a problem doing these out of order.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a linear person. Let's do the first one first, Dan.
Okay, let me give you that motion. I move that the City Council approve ordinance number 2022-06, amending Title 7 of the North Salt Lake Code.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Did we already have a motion on the table at this point?
Yes, you do.
I'll second that motion.
All right. Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Both motions pass. Thank you. Next item. Consideration of an easement on city property at 725 East, requested by Rocky Mountain Power.
So in 2018, there was an agreement signed with Verizon Wireless that the city would lease the northeast corner of our Morton Tank property to them to build a cell tower. They have come to us with a request for an easement for Rocky Mountain Power. There is no existing public utility easement along this road because it was not part of a platted subdivision. There is an existing transformer located at the Morton Pump Station, which is there in the southeast corner of the lot. And to the north of this lot is Bountiful. And so Rocky Mountain Power is not available to come from the north. They have requested, their original request was to run the easement along the frontage of 725 East, which we have declined. It was reviewed by myself in conjunction with Public Works. We have a large number of conduits, waterline pipes, telemetry lines, power lines that run in between the existing pump station and a buried water control vault that is there in that little pie shape in that bottom corner. And so we went back to them and said, we would prefer your easement path avoid all of our very important infrastructure. And they have this revised easement, although it looks a little odd, was at our request.
So can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So is this... I'm having a little trouble seeing the easement on here. So is it to the left of what was there before?
Yeah, so what's there right now, you can see the round mark for the tank kind of center of the lot. The dark gray square at the bottom of the box, that's our pump station.
Okay.
And then the access road, which is asphalt, goes up and curves. The dark gray line that crosses from our square pump station to our round tank parallels the road, then turns north. That's the easement. The dark gray box on the very north property line, that's the lease area that Verizon Wireless will be using. And then there's kind of a medium gray box below that, and that's their access road.
So their easement is that medium gray box?
Yes.
That's what the one that you're requiring?
Somebody's helpfully... Yep, that's it. Yep, that was the correct spot.
So that's the easements, just that one little area, or we're talking about all along the road there?
So beginning right there, going straight up, that's the path. It goes from our existing transformer all the way up to where their cell tower lease site is.
Okay.
Actually, the top one, yeah.
Okay.
So we don't have any facilities in this area. We feel like it's a very reasonable location for them to run, and we do not want them running along the frontage of the road.
Makes sense.
Okay. Any further questions on this? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion. I move the City Council approve the attached easement with Rocky Mountain Power and authorize the mayor to sign the approved easement in any of their documents needed to execute the subject easement.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comments? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Karen. Next item is the council reports. Let's start with Ted.
I am going to not report on anything tonight.
Okay. Lisa?
We're going to talk a little bit about the senior lunch bunch. Maybe we can talk about that. We don't have to do this instant if you don't want to. Maybe we can go around first and then, but that's something I'd like to report on.
Okay. Ken, could I recommend that we put that on the next agenda? Next
sure.
Council agenda?
Yes.
We can be thinking about it.
Okay.
That. Stanley?
Well, I want to report thanks to Allie and the other people that helped that we had a very successful get to the river this last Saturday. Had a pretty good sized crowd there. I think we counted 80 people or so. And we floated down the river and got out and everybody was safe and a lot of compliments. Only had one complaint. And that was to Allie. She said that some lady said, no, I didn't enjoy it. But all her friends that were with her did, so I guess they kind of...
It was a little cool, wasn't it?
It was perfect weather. Actually, it couldn't have been better.
Well, did we have the paddleboarder show up?
And we did have a paddleboarder show up. She went the whole way on the paddleboard.
Yeah, awesome.
She had a duck under the head gate, and that was the only place she ducked down, but she didn't fall in, and she enjoyed it. And the weather was perfect. We got there, it was sprinkling just a little, and I'm looking out. First, I thought a lot of people might not show up because it was kind of sprinkling, but as soon as we got ready to start doing anything, it stopped, and the sky was clear, and the weather was perfect, the temperatures were perfect, and then we got out, and then it started sprinkling a little bit just as we got out, so it was great.
All right, thank you. Natalie?
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Elisa?
Thank you. The Health and Wellness Committee met last week and had a really productive meeting brainstorming goals for the committee in every specified area in the original ordinance or resolution, which is quite broad. And then we will pick that up next meeting to fine-tune what some of those goals might be in a short term. One of those goals that I want to touch on, too, actually, one is with regard to wellness and physical wellness and safety, is the idea that Ken mentioned earlier about reviewing active transportation and safe access to schools and just doing a review of walkability within a certain parameter of the schools in the neighborhoods to see where we might paint lines and bike lanes and red curb striping and anything else like that, which I think is exciting to and I'm excited to be a part of that. The second one that the committee talked about is access or services for seniors in the city. And one thing that they talked about is partnering in some way with the Senior Lunch Bunch, whether that is in a brainstorming session to ask seniors what services they'd like to see or what they feel is missing, or if it's providing speakers or resources connecting those to the group. I mentioned that to Conrad when he was here just a minute ago, and he said they have availability on October 12th, which is just their next meeting, if we wanted to bring in a speaker. So I will connect with you and see if we have something for that. And then the last thing for me, the Foxborough Student Council is partnering with the Youth City Council next Tuesday for the mobile food pantry. So the sixth graders at the elementary school are meeting with the high school Youth City Council and they're going to do a little overview of what they do and then help distribute the food that day, which I think is a really great collaboration. Thanks for helping with that. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. City Attorney report. Todd, do you have anything for us? Okay, thank you. Mayor's report. I've just got a couple of things. I had a nice conversation with the Kaysville mayor and also separately a member of their city council, both very appreciative of the letter we sent to them about the tragedy they had over the July holiday. That was well received and appreciated. Dave, is there anything going on this weekend? It's time to, it's fall cleanup. So that's one of the best times of the year, I guess. South Davis Fire District. We've lost, since July, 8 firefighters. 4 of them were wage-related. 2, what I call newbies, bombed out of the training. But it kind of made me feel good about that we've increased our police officers' salaries and such, because it's tough to replace these people. Just as a little note on the state of the world, the residents of Jackson, Mississippi filed a class action lawsuit against their city for not having clean water. And so if you think it's expensive to have clean water, wait till you get sued for not having it. I got a call today, and I've noticed it the last few days myself, dust from the gravel pit's been really bad. And I know we're trying to save water, but I thought I'd bring that up. It's been bad.
It has been. We've seen it.
In fact, the call, they suggested there's some kind of an oil-based dust reducer, vegetable oil, that I've never heard of that, but I thought I'd pass that on.
If I can make a comment to that.
A giant can of Pam.
Yeah.
No, there's actually a company within our city that produces a product that they put on roads to keep the dust down. Yeah. It's over here. It used to be Coke Asphalt. I don't know if it's still called that or not, but it's over.
Maybe they could call it Stan.
Yeah. It's over on 1100, but it's a product that they've made for years, and they still make it, I'm sure, that they put on normal roads just to keep the dust down.
Up where my cabin is, they put it on. I can't remember the chemical name, but it's kind of almost like it's kind of glistens when they put it on. It has kind of a glue kind of look to it, but it definitely controls the dust.
Makes everything kind of clump up so that it doesn't get the fine particles.
So this is a really frustrating issue, and earlier this year I reached out to Hughes. Told them that we were experiencing dust, an increase in dust, because we've noticed it this summer. Some of it is weather-related. Some of it is definitely changes in their operations at the pit. They do a couple of activities that are particularly... they just create smoke and dust. One of those things is that they push... large truckloads of material over the edge of their pit, and you might notice if you look there, you'll notice on both sides of the state pit there's places where it looks like looks like an avalanche has come through, and there are avalanches a couple of times a day that come down because they're pushing that material off the edge, which creates a huge amount of dust. So we've been going back and forth with Hughes. They're not super, you might imagine, they're not super responsive, claim that they're in complete compliance with the state of Utah, who has jurisdiction over air quality in these cases. We reached out to the state of Utah, Sherry did, and alerted them to the idea that they're not really inspecting the pit during times when we observe the dust. And so we gave them some time periods when the dust is particularly bad. I'm surprised that we're not getting more calls, or that the state of Utah or Highway Patrol is not getting calls, because at times at 6 in the morning, I-15 is just covered as though there's a fog, and there's lots of commuters going both directions. Anyway, we've brought that to their attention and suggested that they inspect in two ways. Number one, they don't call ahead, which amazingly seems to happen. Hey, we're going to come out and inspect you. Yeah. Can we inspect, you know, at 3 o'clock Thursday afternoon? We'll see you then. Seems like a dumb procedure. Secondly, they're inspecting between the hours of 9 and 4 or something, and not really out there any other times. And so we've brought that to their attention. I don't know if we've had feedback yet. Sherry with video. Have we had some feedback from them, or have we heard from their inspectors yet?
I heard they were on their...
Yes.
I was driving in and saw the cloud of dust, and I grabbed my phone and hit record, yeah. And the two cars in front of me on Highway 89 just disappeared into the dust. It was so thick. And so we sent that video to them. They were sending their inspectors out that morning immediately, right after I sent it, but they'd given them a call first in the email is what they'd said.
So the call I got today was midday, and he said, I just came down Eagle Ridge.
It was bad today. Yeah, so.
Have we heard from some
of it's environmental.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're going to have a lot of success on a windy day. We've had two windy days in a row. We've also had very little precipitation. And so this time of year, we experience huge amounts of dust, and some of which I don't know can be controlled. A lot of it could be controlled, but we don't have a willing, we really don't have a willing pit operator. And I'm, for years, I've wondered if we're fighting against the state of Utah, who has as a priority mining and extraction of materials of this kind as a state economic development priority. And we get, if we push hard enough, invariably we'll get that answer from the state that gravel pits are a land use that's important to the state of Utah for building roads and highways, and it's an economic driver, which is very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
Lisa, did you have some?
Sorry, I interrupted you, council member.
I've noted that the homes that are right over the gravel pit, I've thought about those homeowners and how much dust they must be getting in there. Have we heard from those people?
I haven't.
No. I guess
they're just happy to have homes.
Yeah, they've signed that on the deed. They knew they were going to get dust.
Yeah, so. I got particularly angry when I washed my car one day this summer. And by the end of the day, just sitting in the city parking lot, you know, it was just covered in dust. And it's created a lot of dirt in our town center. It just blows around.
Yeah. So, can I bring up?
Anyway, we'll continue to work on it. I think it's a huge mountain to climb to get any change made there with Hughes and the gravel pits. But we'll keep working on it.
Okay.
Can I bring up just a little factor of this? This, we had a problem way back when, too, where it was getting so bad that we had formed a committee of residents and pit owners, and we'd actually meet once a month, and I was in charge of that, and so I got to hear both sides of the story, and they actually, by having that, I think they became more responsive, and of course the laws have changed a little bit too. It used to be when they drove their trucks out, they'd let the dust fly all over. But the bigger problem, and the secondary problem and all that, is as the roads, like Highway 9 collects the dust, and then as we drive on those roads, that dust stays in the air and it becomes a real health issue.
Yeah.
Back in that day, they did put monitors all around, the state did, to monitor the dust and what it was. And we found that the one at the city offices here was the worst one of any of them. And it wasn't because it was coming from the pit per se, but it was because it was all being left on the road from the pit. And then as the cars drove on it and kept it in the air all day long, is that the air quality was extremely poor compared to some of the residential areas. So when people would complain to me, I'd let them know that, hey, my station next to my house was the worst one. But that is a problem. Yeah. That becomes the bigger problem, is our roads collect all that dirt, but they don't, doesn't stay on the road since we're driving on them.
Okay. That's all I have. Ken?
Yeah, I would, I have a couple of things. I had the fall cleanup on my list, and thanks, Mayor, for raising that. And hopefully that'll be a successful event. It's the Public Works crews do just a wonderful job in our spring and fall cleanup, and they have it down to a science. It's real. We get lots of compliments from residents who come through, and they say, oh, the guys were so helpful, and the drive-through is very convenient. And a couple of times, people have gotten cookies from the Public Works guys. So if you go at the right time, you can get yourself a cookie. I wanted to talk just briefly about the annexation. We have confirmed that on October 5th, which is a Wednesday night, it'll be 2 weeks from tomorrow night, we have scheduled and reserved the main auditorium at Adelaide Elementary to have a friendly, if possible, neighborhood meeting with any residents who wish to come and talk to us and visit with us and ask questions about changes that might occur should the city annex them into North Salt Lake. And so we're trying to get ourselves prepared for that. We sent a document to the council last week with some questions and answers. We've added a number of questions to that we are researching so that we can make some presentations about anything that we can think of, and I appreciate some of you have raised some questions. Stan in particular has asked a few questions. We're going to be looking at those answers. We've talked with county officials. I also would report on a phone call I had today with Commissioner Elliott, the County Commissioner Elliott, and just two things, really. I wanted to see how his experience was, if they were getting calls. He said he's getting lots of calls and emails, not all of them in opposition of the annexation, but most in opposition. The main reason I called him is because I wanted to confirm that it was the county commissioner's position that they wish to incorporate all the unincorporated urban territories. And there's not a whole bunch. There's three or four areas like this area that we have here. And he confirmed that in the county's general plan, it was a goal for them to eliminate these small unincorporated territories that cost per unit to serve is really a high cost, and Heidi's confirmed that. She's looked at that data in her experience with the county, that it costs more for them to remove snow and to provide services, and it takes more time for them to provide services, particularly police services, because the county sheriffs are not nearby. So I just wanted to report to you that The county commission is intending to hold their public hearing on the 27th, which is a week from today. And they will have on their agenda a resolution which will authorize the annexation of this territory, and their intention is to pass that resolution. So
I just ask a question along that line. Thank you for the document that was created. That was very helpful, had a lot of really good information. I think it would also be helpful if there was either a second document or if there was an addendum to that document that explains why it's valuable to North Salt Lake. I feel like a lot of the framing of this public conversation right now is in the defensive of, here's why we want you to come here. Please be a part of us. And quite honestly, that's not how I feel. I feel like, why is it in the best interest of the rest of our city to take on this infrastructure that is aging, that we will then put into our roads budgets to add all of this? So as a current resident of North Salt Lake, I would also like to have those questions answered about, here's what benefits this brings to our city, because I'm not convinced at this point that they outweigh the costs if the public outcry is in opposition. If the public outcry was not in opposition and people who lived there felt content enough to be annexed in, then it might not feel as necessary to be convinced that it's valuable to the city, but it right now for me feels like that's important. I also think in this meeting at Adelaide, it would be helpful to dedicate a portion of the meeting to that content to just show that this is a two-sided story. This is not just a convincing of you to come and want to be a part of us. And potentially there will be people in the audience who will be from North Salt Lake who will say, why do I want my taxes to go up to make sure that their water pipes are now where they need to be for our entire city? Like this, we're not just taking in a portion of the city like in Foxborough that is a new infrastructure. We're taking an old infrastructure area that hasn't been maintained in any structured, careful way like we have done here in North Salt Lake, and we're going to have to take that on indefinitely.
Yeah,
so
they did just resurface their streets in the last 5 years, so that,
and that's
so that
good. That's one piece, but yeah, as we see in every city count.
Yeah, I agree with you on how the issue is framed, and as I've talked to residents, a few residents, both in opposition and in favor of the annexation, I've taken the approach that good governance and equity in taxation would indicate that these kinds of islands need to be corrected and come into cities, because that's where the services can be provided for the least amount of public cost.
And then one more piece in the part about Bountiful being annexed into Bountiful. I think it would be helpful to just put in there, Bountiful doesn't want to.
Yeah.
The answer kind of says, well, it's not in the annexation policy, but that seems like a logistical problem, but that's not the problem. The problem is Bountiful actually doesn't want that. So
can I ask a,
yeah,
I don't mean to interrupt you. Can I ask a question maybe to Todd? So isn't there language in the state law regarding annexation relative to not creating a peninsula? So my question is relative to, let's say hypothetically that it was flipped and Bountiful wanted to annex this area in question. That clearly would create a peninsula, it seems. So is that outright against the law, or is it sort of a guideline that if pressed, how firm is that? It would be helpful in a way to be able to put that to bed, the question of, well, we want Bountiful or whatever, to just say, look, Bountiful's not on the table. It's pretty clear it would create a peninsula, end of story. So
I haven't looked at this area, but the definition of peninsula is pretty clear. And this appears to me that like it would likely meet that definition. In the event it does, that is disabling. So,
Mayor, you know what, Todd? I actually looked this up before I came. It's in 10.2.402 on annexations, and it says, "And an unincorporated area may not be annexed to a municipality unless the area is contiguous, the unincorporated area is contiguous to the municipality, and annexation will not leave or create an unincorporated island." So it's clear in the code that we can't create a peninsula.
Well, island or peninsula are different things. And the
peninsula, it says unincorporated peninsula too.
Yeah, and it has a very specific definition that has measurements. Have you done the measurements on it as it relates to how it would affect Bountiful?
So I don't think it wouldn't create an unincorporated peninsula or an unincorporated island. It would actually fix the problem no matter which city annexed it. It's the leaving of the peninsula of county or the island. And I was at the planning conference 2 weeks ago, and Wilf Summercorn was explaining the the length, width. It kind of has to make this weird rectangle. It's a really weird calculation, but I'm not sure that comes into play in this.
I actually think it still does. There's a different section of the code I could point you to.
We'll check it, though. I think it's important to check it.
I do think it's disabling for Bountiful.
But I do think the bigger issue at hand, or as far as that goes, is at some point in the past, North Salt Lake and Bountiful met and said the line between the two cities in this area would be basically 3450 south. And that cuts through the middle of that block, and they would take 3400 south, both sides of the street north, and we would take 3500 south, both sides of the street south, to our current boundary. They did their part and annexed the areas up to that point. They've annexed everything that was within their annexation declaration. We are the ones that haven't annexed because we didn't get petitions. They had certain petitions over the years that got streets together, neighborhoods together, and annexed into the city.
Can I speak to some of that?
Yes, go ahead.
Since I was around when all that happened. And if you saw the news articles they sent out today, they're not official documents, but they're pretty well clear what happened. And that is, the whole area was petitioned to be annexed into Bountiful. And they actually had all the signatures in place. And then somebody went around, a group got organized, went around and took a lot of those signatures off the petition by various means. And so the annexation did not go through for the whole area in the Bountiful. And so the same group that really wanted the annexation went ahead and divided up into four sections. And that north section that goes down now that is in Bountiful was able to get the signatures and annex into Bountiful. But the rest of the area never did want to participate, except Odell Lane, which we did, you know, the people there actually signed the petition and we annexed that area in moving forward. But
then in 2003, we adopted our annexation policy plan that included the remainder of this area that you're talking about today.
Right, and we have it all in there. And you know, a lot of the residents in our city feel that it, and Bountiful City as well, and you can read that in some of the articles that were out there, feel it's very unfair that the county area is not in a city, because then they're not paying for parks, but they use our parks. And it's either our parks or Bountiful's or Woods Cross or something, and they're not paying for those services. That's one of the definite things that was illustrated.
I've got to object to that, because the phone call I got, he assured us that no one over there is using any of our parks.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll all hear that as well, but the reality of it is there are people that use our parks and Bountiful's parks, and so Bountiful encouraged us, and in fact they almost made us swear that we would, you know, would not oppose any annexation coming in from that area, coming into our city, because they felt they'd done their part and thought we should do our part. And it really makes most sense, although I know that the name Bountiful, that's one of the big problems, is that we know that residential people generally like the name Bountiful over North Salt Lake. And we've tried changing the names in the past, and we know how that went. And it's because the commercial area, and this historically goes way back when the city was formed, is that the Cudahy packing plant kind of came to the council and said, if you change the name to Orchard, I think that was the original name that they were hoping to get, you change the name to Orchard, we'll de-annex from you because we don't like that name, and you won't get any of our tax dollars. And so the council reconsidered, and they made it North Salt Lake. And since that time, there's probably been four or five attempts to change the name by the residents, but the commercial people would not have it any other way. They enjoy the name North Salt Lake. They put some on the map. People know where North Salt Lake is. They'd have no idea if we named it something else. So just a little history update there.
So I brought it up so that, just so you know, there's a meeting on the 5th.
Can I add something for that meeting? Are you going to that meeting?
Well, I think the meeting is being put on by us.
Sorry, not the 5th.
The 5th. Oh, the 27th?
The 27th.
Yes.
I feel like as the county wants to put pressure on the cities to annex, if it is like you had referenced, it makes more sense financially to put them in cities locally. I agree with that. But if the residents don't want to do it and the county doesn't want to do it, the county should increase their taxes for the people who live there so that annexing into the local city feels like a better option. Is my recommendation.
And I think the county will do that.
And that's been our recommendation ever since this last thing happened 30 years ago.
Ken, what time was that?
So that's at 10 a.m. It's the
meeting
on October 5th, it would be 6:30 to 8:30. And as we put our information together, we'll share it with the council so that you know what to expect. Adelaide and Elementary, and we ought to have some elected officials there. We'll advertise it as a meeting where they can come and meet the mayor and council, and not that you all have to be there, but
6:30 to 8:30.
I know I have to be there, so.
Sorry, I forgot the time already.
6:30 to
8:30. 6:30 to 8:30.
Can I make two quick thoughts on the annexation.
Can I say something first?
Yes, please.
Yeah. I'm getting a little concerned that we're going to have a set of minutes that talk about our position on the annexation. I just want to make sure we're not going to get ourselves in trouble with some residents.
That's fair. Hopefully this is clear that I'm not making a statement on position, but I just want to note that I think that when we talk about the annexation, I think it's both fair and helpful to say we as a city are not initiating this. Davis County is initiating this, right? And then we can be in the position where we are listening and we are deliberating, and we can talk about how, look, we are not the initiator of this. So that's point one. Point two, whatever ends up happening, I'll just say that I think that there's value in us going together and being on the same page as a council. We'll talk about that when we talk about it, not tonight.
Thank you. And I wasn't trying to shut anybody down. I just don't want to have a long set of minutes out there with okay, my last item is I had a phone call with Bronson Sulzer, and some of us have talked about Bronson. He's looking for a location to build indoor tennis courts, 5 to 6 courts, and some pickleball courts, maybe 4 pickleball courts. He would very much like to use the west side of Tunnel Springs Park in either a purchase or a lease or something. I suggested to him, he doesn't really want to come to a council meeting. It's not that he doesn't want to come to a council meeting. I don't think it's helpful to have someone come to a council meeting to the podium and say, you know, I really want to do this. Would you guys sell me some of Tunnel Springs? So I suggested that we have a meeting where he comes into the office, really tells us what he wants to do, but that we have a couple of elected officials in the room so that you can hear what he wants to do. And that's as far as I went. So I owe him a phone call. If that's a way that you want to go, perhaps a couple of you could volunteer to be in a meeting so that we could hear him talk about what he wants to do at Tunnel Springs.
I definitely would like to do that.
I would like to volunteer.
I don't know if it would be appropriate to gauge interest in this project at this point to see if it's worthwhile putting any effort in going down this path. When I think about leasing or selling city property and parks, it feels like a fast no from me. So if it's not a fast no from everyone else, then yes, let's continue and pursue. But if it also feels like a quick no, I don't know if we need to take up time to do that.
I just don't think that I know enough about what he's proposing. And I did not want to sit down with him without maybe even the mayor in the room or somebody who...
I'll attend to, but I'm negative to the idea.
I am too. Thanks for attending so I don't have to.
Well, that... I mean, right there we've got...
I can also call him and say the council's not interested in me.
Yeah, I just looked at it like... there are ways to structure things. Like back when I was a young college student, the city of Murray went into an agreement with Tom Buxton to create Sports Mall. And there was tax breaks and incentives. And at some point down the road, I think it was 15 years, that facility became property of the city of Murray. And so here's someone, you know, we've got this land that, frankly, we don't have the money to go do anything with it because we're trying to do other things. And here's someone that's coming in saying, I'll put in pickleball courts, I'll put in tennis courts, we'll make it, you know, and we don't know the whole if, ands, and buts, but at some point, whether it's a ground lease or a reverse to the city or something, here's someone willing to spend money in our city, I'm willing to listen to him. And that's, you know, what if he said, I want to go into Hatch Park and build a rec center? You know, we'd all be falling over ourselves to sign him up. You know?
It took a lot of us a long time to get to giving away half the park for a rec center.
It did, me too. Yeah. But anyway,
Mayor,
I
think that's a really good point, and I appreciate listening to that. So as you go into the meeting, one thing I would be looking for is a clear net positive for the city. And finishing undeveloped land doesn't feel like a net positive for me, because while we don't have the money right now, we are in it for the long-term planning for the city. And that doesn't mean in 10 years we won't have the money. But if in 10 years we have now run down indoor tennis courts and pickleballs, now what's the city going to do with that?
Yeah.
So I just need to know, like, what is the length of the lease that you're looking for? Does the city then assume the buildings in 10 years or something? And those things could be really compelling, but at face value, I feel really reticent to think that seems like a great deal for the city.
And I appreciate that. And I think I've never met this man, but there is a window of opportunity here that because of his children. And, you know, if we said, we'll come back in 10 years and let's do this, he would be not interested because his children are grown at that point.
And to follow up to that, I feel like the second piece, so first piece, what's the net positive for the city? Second piece, what is the access to city residents?
Yeah.
Because the children who live in the city, who we are asking and creating infrastructure that makes them live in high-density situations, need public spaces. And if one
it
of those public
spaces...
It
doesn't make them live in high-density. So it gives them the choice to live.
But if they live here, then there's more of those options.
Yeah.
So if they're living in North Salt Lake, there's a higher likelihood.
I think we're all in agreement. It has to be some kind of a win.
But like if they have to pay then to go to play tennis, I don't know if that's serving enough city residents.
Yeah, and I don't know that he's suggesting that.
Yeah, no. And so those details matter.
Yeah, okay.
And can I just say something? We've had a lot of ideas for that land up there in the past. One of my ideas was the lake. Because we found the underground lake that's already there, and then people could go up there and enjoy that. But we've also had developers come and on the side ask if we'd ever consider selling it for a high-dense development, and we pretty well said, yeah, you don't need to talk to us about that. But I think we should keep our minds open on what that could be, because I've always been Mr. Open Space. And I enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it the way it is right now, because since we had to use it for the landslide and we put all the dirt there, then it's not native open space anymore. It's just really a big weed patch, which I think we need to decide what we ought to do with sooner than later, even if we just go out and mow it or something, because it's not like it was before. It's not native. It's pretty ugly nowadays if you've ever been up there. So anyway, I'm open to listening.
So I have three who would attend a meeting. Great. Thank you. That's all I have.
All right. Any other items for us? Motion? Ryan?
Make a motion that we adjourn this meeting, Mayor.
All right. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.